From Portland, Oregon, this is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rockney Roll. Coming up this episode, campus occupations have taken over colleges and headlines nationwide in recent weeks, branding their motivations as pro-Palestinian, but espousing language and ideas that are something else entirely. I spoke with Rabbi Meir Goldstein, the senior Jewish educator at Oregon Hillel in Eugene, where such an encampment has taken root at the University of Oregon. We talk about what's going on in and around these camps, and why this is not the campus protest movement of yesteryear, but something far more sinister. Not an easy subject, but an important one. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland, presenting its 104th annual meeting Thursday, June 6th at Congregation Neve Shalom in Portland, highlighting a year's worth of accomplishments and looking to the future of Jewish community in Portland and beyond. This event will include presentations from Secure Communities Network and Dror Israel. Register online at jewishportland.org/JFGPannual24. Link in the episode notes. Now, here's Rabbi Meir Goldstein. Rabbi Meir Goldstein, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Oh, thank you. It's really such a joy to be here. Thank you, Rockney.
Thank you. So tell me about your Jewish journey.
So I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and I had the tremendous blessing of growing up in the same place as my grandparents, with whom I was very close. We belonged to one of the local synagogues and, you know, went to Sunday school and all of that. But, you know, we weren't regular shul goers. Judaism, for me, was very much a family affair. Having meals at my grandparents' apartment and Passover Seder. And, you know, at the time when I was young, I thought that Papi, my grandfather, was the most Jewish human being on the planet. He was not traditionally from, although his parents were. His family had come over from the old country. But Judaism was just, it was a mishpacha thing. It was a family thing. I was in youth group, and I went to a local camp in Arizona at the time. It was called Camp Pearlstein. It's now Camp Stein. And went to some regional events in high school. And that really became the foundation of my closest group of friends. And to a large extent, they're still some of my closest friends on the planet. Some of the people I love most on the planet and who know me the best, and despite that, love me the best as well. So it was very much familial. As it turned out, as an undergrad, I studied anthropology of religion, and it never once dawned on me to study Judaism. I thought, you know, why would I study my family and friends? That seems odd. But later on, a couple of years afterwards, I found myself being far more interested in connecting communally and became very interested in Jewish texts, and found my way eventually to Israel to learn Hebrew, went to Ulpan, and one thing led to another, and by the time my time in Israel was coming to an end, I had a real conundrum in front of me where I really had to choose between two real, real tantalizing options, one being making Aliyah and finding a home and finding my way in Israel, or returning back to North America and serving the Jewish American community as the best extent I could. So I chose the latter and ended up in rabbinical school, and I went to Ziegler School of Rabbinical Studies in Los Angeles, which was then connected to University of Judaism and now the American Jewish University. And it was a fantastic experience. I had many great teachers and even more great friends in Chavruta, and some of whom, again, are some of my closest friends to this day. So I was ordained 18 years ago, and my rabbinate has always been grounded on two pillars. One has been pastoral care, and one has been education. And then underneath that has been a deep and loving wrestling with God and Jewish traditions and learning. And for the past decade, I've been in the Hillel movement. In the past 5 years, I've been here in Oregon, at Oregon Hillel, and as a senior Jewish educator, and also at the University of Oregon on the Judaic Studies faculty.
Which I understand will be coming to an end in the near future, as you've announced that you're taking a congregational post back east.
in the Midwest. But yeah, I'm excited for the going, but I'm sad for the leaving. And the idea of leaving my students is very sad. But I've been very blessed by some wonderful students, and still am, and hope to maintain learning with them. And I'm glad that I'll be teaching at a university in my new position as well. But I'm sad to leave the Ducks here.
Speaking of universities, in the last few weeks, we've seen a variety of, I hate to call them protests because that gives the wrong impression, demonstrations might be the better word, on campuses across the country related to the war in Gaza. What's been your perspective on those events, both nationally and in more recent days locally?
Yeah, and thank you for asking. You know, immediately after the Hamas terrorist attack on October 7th, we shifted gears, I mean, as the entire Jewish world did, but on campus we shifted gears. The question's always, what best serves the students? And so immediately the question was, what can we provide for students? We created spaces for them to come and listen and mourn and grief and try and understand what was going on. We had a vigil on campus, and it was a moving and powerful experience. Shortly thereafter, on our campus, there was a chapter of SJP. I think there was one that was dormant for a long time that reconstituted. And there's a new chapter of JVP that started on campus. And they started holding meetings, putting up signs around campus, and then escalated to die-ins and events throughout campus. And so things have been percolating throughout the past 7 months.
And before we go any further, just for the sake of listeners, SJP is Students for Justice in Palestine, which our Portland listeners will, I'm sure, be aware of thanks to the Portland State University's chapter's various activities over the years. And then JVP is Jewish Voice for Peace, a anti-Zionist Jewish movement.
Right. So that's been the lay of the land. So prior to the current encampments starting first, as far as I know, first in Columbia and spreading to various other campuses, and then eventually now to the University of Oregon, and I understand, and some things are happening up in Corvallis as well. Certainly things have been happening in Portland for a while. But prior to the encampments here, there's already been an incredible rise in intimidation of Jewish students, of anti-Semitic acts, of teachers on faculty as well, and especially graduate students, in some cases supporting Hamas, in other cases simply deriding Israel. So Jewish students were already feeling, many Jewish students were already feeling encumbered. They'd already been feeling the need to hide their identity. Some had been verbally attacked. Some have had seen vandalism spikes. Some of the similar spikes that we've seen across the country and across campuses. That was the general atmosphere prior to the encampment. And now, since the encampment started on Sunday, on the seventh day of Pesach, things have just gotten intensified. Things have gotten worse. So there was a small encampment that began on Monday. I believe there were somewhere in the neighborhood of about 20 or so tents. They're very nice tents. I'd love one, but anyhow, there's a lot of Marmot and high-end North Face tents.
Some good gear then, yeah.
Very good gear. Yeah. Whoever's bankrolling it is definitely not skimping on the tents. And so now it started at about 20 tents as of yesterday. I believe the last number I heard was we were at about 100 tents. And since that time, we've responded in a very similar way to how we did on October 7th, in response to the terrorist attack, of having more listening sessions and more pastoral care. I mean, pastoral care that I've been providing has been nonstop in the last 7 months, but it's been just the tone of what I'm hearing is definitely ratcheted up. I had a listening session with students on Wednesday, and there were a whole number of different things, trends that came out of it. Many of them are just avoiding the area of the encampment altogether. So there are certain parts of campus where they feel as though they're persona non grata.
Where is the encampment on the UO campus?
It's directly across 13th Street from Lillis on the quad and grassy area.
Okay.
For those of you that are familiar, so that puts it in front of the Knight Library and in front of the Schnitzer Museum.
Mm-hmm. For those who might not be familiar with UO campus, if you're coming from almost any of the residential buildings, any of the dormitories on campus to the main library facility, you, not passing this encampment location would be a challenge for students. You'd have to really go out of your way.
Yeah. To your point, it's right near one of the main entrances to the campus on 13th and Kincaid.
What are some of the reports you're hearing from students about what's going on around this encampment?
I've spoken with a lot of students. They definitely don't feel comfortable. Most of them don't feel comfortable going near the encampment. They feel the need to hide their Jewish identity, so they'll tuck their Jewish stars inside their shirts or other marking characteristics. I wear a kippah on campus, and I walked by there, but that's me. Each person's going to make their own decision, and I'm a lot older than a student. So, but definitely, students have adjusted how they act in public in general. They feel more. They've started censoring themselves, and they feel more fearful about expressing opinions, any opinions that would be in contradiction to what's being chanted at the encampments.
And what is being chanted at the encampments? When you've walked by, what's the messaging you've seen coming out of it?
It depends on when you walk by and who happens to be chanting at the time. So there's definitely been calls for intifada. There's been calls for free Palestine. They've chanted the Hamas slogan of from the river to the sea. Those are the ones I've heard and have had reported to me.
And what is the university administration's reaction to this, Ben, that you've seen? Or any contact that you've had with officials on campus?
Basically, what the officials have said, we're monitoring the situation. The UO admin has said that the speech is protected under the First Amendment as long as they follow the protocols for demonstrations and activism on campus. They actually didn't follow in terms of they'd never got a permit to be on the quad. All student organizations and affiliates such as Hillel, we all need to fill out permits. But that being said, they were violating university code by interrupting classes through noise. They've since stopped some of that. The university let them know that they weren't going to be permitted to do that. The president of the university made a proclamation on Wednesday that there would be no response from the UO admin in terms of divesting or boycotting Israel, which are the demands of the mob. He also didn't say that the area was going to be cleared out currently. It was noted that there is one of the largest events of the spring term is the Activity Spring Fair, which takes place right on the main street on 13th, right in front of where the encampment is, that they were going to be moved for that.
That the encampment was going to be moved for Spring Fair?
I've heard conflicting things from different folks on that. So we'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
That'll be next week. So we'll see quick. We'll see soon.
So you mentioned that some of the tents that the encampment was using, as I sort of alluded to as well, are a type of equipment not usually in the possession of college students. I mean, when I was camping in college, I did not have tents as nice as those which you were mentioning, which I think alluded to some sort of outside influence. Is that something you have reason to think that this is being led or instigated or supported by agitators from outside the campus community?
I don't have any evidence or reason to think that specifically, other than we've seen that that's the case with other encampments. So I don't have a reason to think it's not the case. Certainly there's a national JVP and there's a national SJP, and the chants seem pretty much the same from encampment to encampment. The way they're set up seems pretty much the same. The way they're organized is pretty much the same. There's a media tent. So there's no reason for me to think that it's not orchestrated. And
it certainly gives the appearance of being so.
For sure. And then if that's the case, and again, I have no reason to think it's not, we know that organizations such as SJP specifically receive funding from the Qatari government, from Qatar, mm-hmm. who also funds Hamas. So it's not a surprise when other encampments, I haven't heard it here, but when participants from other encampments pledge their allegiance and support to Hamas terrorism, nor is it a surprise when it goes the other direction, that even if that's not their intention, that we've seen Hamas and other terrorist and organizations, terrorist funding, say they appreciate these encampments and what's going on campus. So at the very least, those who are leading these political demonstrations are at the very least comfortable with supporting terrorism, if not just outright being funded by the same sources.
It's probably worth noting in this moment while protesting Israeli actions is not inherently anti-Semitic, we've heard from one of the leaders of the encampment, and I think that's a good word, at Columbia, who openly said that he advocates for the killing of Zionists, of those who support the state of Israel. That seems like something that's beyond what we're used to and is a new phenomenon in terms of campus protest, and is something that really begs the question of the university has pledged to uphold free speech. Where's the line?
That's right. And if we, I think that's a really great example. I think the student leader, and this wasn't a random, he was one of the main organizers. But when they're calling either for saying kill Zionists, such as the graffiti near the encampment at U of O said, or simply Zionists shouldn't be allowed to be safe in Eugene, as activists, local activists have been proclaiming for some time in the past 7 months. Who are we talking about? We're talking about Jews. We're talking about the vast majority of the American Jewish community. And basically what we're saying is, if there are Jews who think what we allow them to think, then we're okay with their living here. But if not, then not.
That's a frightening tone for anything that public discourse has come to that.
Yes, it is. Look, they're talking about intifada. What is intifada? There's been two intifadas. They're both violent uprisings that targeted civilians and killed civilians, Israelis and Palestinians for that matter. Mm. And if you're talking about globalizing the intifada, then who's the target? It's a violent targeting of non-combatants globally that specifically targets Jews. They're chanting that on campus here, on my campus at the U of O. They're chanting for an intifada. That's what they're chanting for. It's very disturbing.
You mentioned that you were ordained 18 years ago, which makes you slightly older than myself. So you might have memories of previous protest movements in the United States, particularly on college campuses. This looks and feels, at least from my understanding of history, looks and feels different than really anything we've experienced previously in terms of campus protest. What is it about this that's so notably different?
It's a great question. So when we look at activism, it's very clearly delineates boundaries between us and them. And the them is who we want to protest against or to cause to change their actions or words. So though it's before my time as well, certainly the largest, one of, if not the largest protest movements on universities in America was during the Vietnam War period, which is an anti-war movement at a time in which many universities were supporting the military. And so they had very specific demands, say, about the military and about the admin at the universities and the faculty for that matter as well. Here's a very different situation in that many of the faculty and many of the administrators on many of the campuses agree with what's being said. And what's being called for actually has very little to do with anything happening on campus, but has a lot to do with things that are happening 10,000 miles away. to drill down a little bit. So when I was an undergrad in the 90s, I was involved in activism opposing the proliferation of nuclear arms. So one of the things that we were involved with was finding organizations and groups that were developing and selling nuclear arms, trying to educate about that, and then going and protesting and trying to get them to change their actions. Here it seems very different, and that there's a subset of the population that is the Jewish students, in part, are being targeted and made to feel uncomfortable on the campus. So, for instance, there was a march through, started in downtown Eugene, went through campus, I don't even remember, a couple months ago at this point, an anti-Israel march, an anti-war march. It had lots of different valences to it. And they ended up, by happenstance, right in front of the Hillel House, which is one of the two markedly Jewish buildings and safe spaces on campus, if you will. Certainly the one closest to campus. And so students were inside. They felt they had to come inside, and they were, as a few of them were, quite terrified as to what was going on and why there were these protests in front of the Hillel House. When we spoke with students afterwards, they said, they hadn't intended to end up there. And so we said, well, you know, you did. And many people in our community were really hurt by that. And they said, they didn't mean that. I said, okay, great. Well, you know, would you say that? And they wouldn't. At the very least, I'll take them at their word, at the very least, they're comfortable with intimidating the Jewish community, even if that wasn't their stated goal.
It's interesting that you pointed out that many of the notable protest movements in the American past in college environments have been anti-war or have been peace demonstrations. And while the encampments that we're seeing now would probably like to brand themselves in that light, the messaging you're describing is frankly anything but, and not to put too fine a point of it, but is almost the opposite when we're talking about actively calling for the killing of Zionists.
And chance for violence, as with Intifada, and chance for creating a Judenrein, a Jew-free zone, formerly known as Israel, with their chance from the river to the sea.
Rabbi Meir Goldstein, thank you so much for joining us in the Jewish Review podcast.
Thank you, Rafi.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review podcast. An enormous thank you to Rabbi Meir Goldstein for sharing his experiences with us. The Jewish Review is continuing to pursue this developing story. Check out our latest reporting online at jewishportland.org/Jewish Review. If you like this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice. Click subscribe to get our latest episode every 2 weeks, and be sure to tell a friend. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. The Jewish Review podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is Karone Blau-Rothstein. Special thanks to Daniel Berger. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rockney Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, all the best.